When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
This episode is proudly brought to you by Pregnant Together, a virtual community for queer folks, solo parents, and anyone who's ever felt different through the process of growing your family. It's run by queer midwife Maria Goodman, and this community offers tons of resources for every stage of family building. From trying to conceive to parenting, you're going to get monthly live support groups, you're going to get access and advice from a queer healthcare provider, and best of all, you're going to get connection with a community of folks going through the same ups and downs that you are, which is priceless. And the best part of it is listeners of the Queer Family Podcast get their first month for free, y'all. You're going to click the link in our show notes to get your free month and get started now. To learn more, head to www.pregnanttogether.com. Enjoy.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
There were red flags that our agency didn't pick up on, or they should have. And we were so green.
Yeah.
That she preferred to work with straight couples, and she was pretty religious. Oh. And we were like, well, after the fact, you start piecing through everything. I'm a criminal investigator by trade.
Welcome to the Queer Family Podcast, y'all. The show all about family, but with gay. Wink, wink. My name is Jamie. I'm your gay host. And you, my friends, are tuning into this show whose mission is, and always has been, to celebrate, highlight, uplift, and normalize LGBTQIA plus families in all of our beautiful identities. And woo, this episode does just that, y'all. I had the pleasure of sitting down with a man named Corey Allen. Here's what you need to know about Corey before you just listen to the interview. I'm not going to say much. Corey is ex-military. He's an ex-cop, and he is ex-secret service agent, y'all. And he's also gay. That tells you a lot. And he and his husband are currently in a surrogacy journey that, as you can imagine, as usually is the case with our family building stories, has taken some major twists and turns. That's all I'm going to say. It's a beautiful story. Can't wait for you to hear it. But before I roll the tape, I got to say a shout out to our newest Patreon members. Dun, dun, thank you, the Broadway Husbands, who I interviewed last Pride. Go listen to it. It's a really great story and interview, and they're really wonderful folks all in all. And I love them to death, and I feel just honored that they are helping me out with my Patreon. Thank you, Broadway Husbands. Love you. I love you. Mwah. Speaking of Patreon, my next Cheers for Queers happy hour is coming up. Mark your calendars, y'all. 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. At April 18th, that's a Thursday night, you're going to bring your drinks and we are going to sit down and chat about a topic that is still yet to be determined. Last month, we talked about LGBTQ books that we love to read to our kids. I brought my whole library, y'all. It was huge. We had a great conversation. And this one's going to be just as fun. If you have ideas for a topic that you would like to go deep on, please send me an email at thequeerfamilypodcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much. And I hope to see you all there. Join my Patreon for as little as $2 a month at patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. And I have one more thing to share with y'all before I roll this tape. I got a little email from one of the guests that was just on. It's from Glenn, who was one of the guests in the episode titled, It's Never Too Late to Come Out. It was about two episodes ago, and he was a father who told the story of coming out after his children were already grown and out of the house and living his whole life in the closet and what that was like. Really beautiful story and everything. But he wrote this. I want to share it with you because it really touched my heart, actually. He said, Jamie, I've listened to the podcast and I was really pleased with the final edit. He says, initially, it was very difficult for me to open up and share some of the things I've held private for so long. With your gentle nature and sensitive approach, thank you, Glenn, I began to feel comfortable enough to tell my full story. Ah, that warms my heart. And he goes on to say, thank you for providing this powerful forum that allows important conversations to be heard and shared. And then I'll skip ahead. And he says, my wish is that others in similar situations would see that coming out can result in a better, fuller, and happier life at any age. Beautiful. Thank you, Glenn. And thank you all for tuning in. I love you all. I'm so glad you tune in week after week. And it's time for me to roll this tape. I've yammered on long enough, as I like to say. Helen, Beulah, Nicole. I don't have any assistants. There's nobody in this room. I just like to pretend that I have a whole team of people helping me out over here in my bedroom that is my studio. Not studio. Helen, Beulah, Nicole, roll that tape.
Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, Corey.
Good morning, Jamie. Thank you so much for having me. It is really great to connect. And the way that this came about is also fascinating through Derek Romaine.
Yep.
So I look forward to what's to come.
Oh, me too. I love Derek and Romaine. They're good people. And anybody that they refer me to, I'm like, hell yeah, let's do this. And also, I know a little bit about your story and I can't wait to hear it. So Corey, without further ado, I'm going to put you on the spot and I'm going to give you 30 seconds to give your 30-second elevator pitch, and I'm getting my timer up because I am going to time you, but I'll never cut you off. It's just all in good fun. Are you ready?
I am. No pressure.
No pressure at all. On your mark. Get set. Go.
I am Corey Allen. I first got into writing when I published my first book, Breaking Free, talking about my time as a Secret Service agent. I was there for about a decade. And left there while I was protecting the Obamas. Fled to California to do a reset on my life, to really settle down and try and put down some roots and find somebody to have a family with, which is what I've been aspiring to do for many, many years. So now here we are 5 years down the road, knee deep in surrogacy journeys. It's been a bumpy ride for us. But as I pivot from the book to greater LGBTQ advocacy and talking about our surrogacy journey and adoption processes I've gone through, my hope is to just spread the word, not only about being gay in a very machismo profession, but to talk about some of the stuff that we've gone through and spread awareness, and hopefully it helps somebody.
Oh my God. Amazing. You went over. I'm not going to hold it against you. It's okay.
I didn't see the timer.
I put it down. I just put it down. When my guests start going over it, I just put it down so you don't get scared. Okay, so I know that you have had a journey that you are still on when it comes to the family building, and we're going to dig into that. But first, we need to dig into the Secret Service thing, because last I checked, there weren't a lot of queer Secret Service agents out there, unless I'm wrong. I just assume.
That is a correct assumption. We had a gay mafia, as we called it.
Can we just dig into the fact that you are a Secret Service agent, also for the Obamas, whom I love? Explain, and what was that like? And what was it like? I don't know if you were you out? Let's like go into this.
Of course. Yeah, I got hired in January of 2010. I was a local police officer in Richmond, Virginia for 6 years prior to that, where I was also closeted. So I went federal in 2010. I was then married to my husband. Just seeking better protections because it was not an LGBTQ friendly environment with the police department at the time. I went federal hoping to have like this aha moment of I'm here and I can be myself and be more free. Was sent to Miami for the Secret Service and spent 4 years there, dealt with some discrimination on that front because it is a very hyper-masculine profession.
Were you out?
No.
No, but they still knew. And so...
There are no secrets in the Secret Service, so they knew before I even stepped foot in the office.
Oh, yeah, because you go through some crazy interview process.
Yeah, six-hour polygraph and all kinds of like background investigation.
Oh, my God. Yeah, okay.
So I did my best to put on this front. I was living two lives. There was my professional life where I was butch, macho agent and busting my rear end to do as well as I could while on the side living on South Beach with my husband and going out. And living up our lives as I was also like kind of coming out of my shell as a gay man that time. Did protection when foreign dignitaries would come in, like the president of Honduras or whoever, or Obama when he was president would come down to Miami. And then transferred to Washington, D.C. in January of 2014, where I did protective intelligence. And again, just rotating protective visits, protecting the Pope when he was in town to
as you Trump. Do.
Yeah, right. Trump's inauguration in 2016. I was able to be assigned to the Obama detail for the last about 3 years of my time there. And I was assigned to Michelle up until I left to try to center my life and rebalance.
Wow. Okay. Just a little intel here. Do you get to know, like you were assigned to Michelle. So does that mean you got friendly with Michelle or is that like you like really have to keep a distance? How does that work? Inside information here, folks.
There is a professionalism on both of our part where she knew my first name. Like she knows who we all are because we're in armored limos together for hours or we're hiking. We're doing whatever it is that they do, traveling the world really during her Becoming book tour, which helped inspire me to write. So yeah, there was professionalism and they would ask how your day was and how are things, but it was kept, you know, they didn't know that like I ended up going through a divorce through that time. They didn't know any of those details because it's not relevant. Really? Right.
It was like surface. It's surface correct. Friendliness.
Mm. Correct. Cordial, super friendly, but also just professional.
You just mentioned a divorce. Was it to a man or to a woman? Yep. So a divorce. Oh, so you got divorced. See, that's a whole other layer. That, you know what, Corey? Let's take it back. Let's take it back to young Corey and when young Corey realized that young Corey was queer, shall we say.
As I hit puberty, it really was pronounced as I was finding myself attracted to my then best friend. Aww. It was like the first huge red flag that, you know, yeah. I was obviously heavily attracted to my friend. But living and growing up in a deeply conservative area, and it's still conservative to this day, just fearful of acting on anything and just you bury that as deep as you can. And I dated women up until I was 26 or 27.
Whoa.
Long-term relationships. I was to the point where I was about to propose to my last girlfriend.
Yeah.
Just doing what society was telling me I was supposed to be doing, despite what I was feeling on the inside.
When did that switch? Like, when did you...
My first hookup was 26, 27. And then once that occurred, I was like, light bulb, hello. Like, this is what feels better. And that's when I knew going forward, okay, I can't do this anymore with deceiving the woman that I was dating at the time, as well as, you know, hiding who I was, at least on a personal level.
So you came out to everyone?
It took time. Once I got I met my future husband and we started dating. I was like, okay, well, there's something here. And so I slowly introduced him to mom and like people in my orbit. And then that was its own process, as it is for most of us. So slowly it came out of my personal life, but my professional life, I kept it hidden.
Because you were in law enforcement already. Like you went straight into law enforcement. Yeah.
Correct. Out of the military. So I just kept it hidden as best I could because I could have been fired for being gay if they had found out. And it just wasn't a safe environment. Really until the Supreme Court overturned, was it 2013 decision that granted benefits federally? So then my husband was then entitled to health and vision and dental insurance and all these other things that we'd been denied up until that point. And that was kind of a turning point where I started to come out professionally. Ooh. So that's a lot.
And then you're in the Secret Service. You really like had to lead this seriously double life for a really long time. And that had to have taken its toll on you.
So the stresses of living the dual lives was coming out in unhealthy ways. And I didn't realize it at the time, but we were going out all the time. We were living on South Beach and we moved to Fort Lauderdale, and just alcohol for our community really is unfortunately a staple of how we de-stress, of how we get together. And generally it's just how it's been for me. Consuming a lot on nights and weekends, and it wasn't affecting my work because it was all kept completely separate, but it wasn't a material. You know, I moved to DC and I started to reflect back of like how these unhealthy habits were forming and just how much I was consuming just due to the makeup of our friend circle and just living down there. And that's where the stress was. Coming out, thankfully, nothing, no harm was ever done and nobody's ever, there was no impact to my career, but it was certainly noticeable. And I've kept an eye on that, you know, in the years since then, because even alcohol growing up was a part normalized in our family, which was unhealthy with domestic violence in the home. That was centered around alcohol as well. So all that kind of bubbles underneath.
Yeah. So do you not drink, do you not have alcohol at all, or it's just moderation?
I do. I know. Just, I make specialty craft cocktails, or like, I like to, I'm a cook in the kitchen. So I like to like experiment and play with those things, but now it's like one or two at most. And
oof. All right. So you led a double life and then you got divorced. Can we go down that path and then how we got to where we are now? And then let's dig into the journey that you're on right now.
Absolutely. We had purchased a new 3,000 square foot home in Alexandria, Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C., because we were already home study approved for adoption. So we're waiting on a call for placement of a newborn. And I was updating the paperwork to just update our address. And my then husband wasn't assisting me. There was no feedback. I was like, hey, what's going on? And then he just openly admitted he wasn't ready for kids, despite us taking all these steps to like get to this point.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, okay, well, when will you be ready for kids? And he didn't have an answer. He wouldn't answer me. And that told me what I needed to know. He didn't want to have children, and that's okay. But as somebody who that's been core to me from the start, was the breaking point where I was like, okay, there were other issues going on in the marriage where we had been just growing apart. I was married to my job. I was traveling a lot. And that was just the final straw that I was like, okay, I can't. I've always wanted the children. I will make this happen. And unfortunately, that led to the divorce. A couple of years later is when I just completely left the Washington, D.C. area for California to do a life reset and start over to find somebody who I could have a family with. And then met my now fiance on a gay cruise of all places.
As you do. Yeah, there you go.
I was a skeptical one who was like, I don't know how these people meet. There's no way you'd find a, you know, somebody on a gay cruise. And of course, it happened to me.
Well, that's so funny because I had a similar situation. I met my wife at a pride party and I went to that party like, oh my God, I'm not going to meet anyone. This is, it's like so skeptical. And and then there you go. So
they appear before you. And then we hit it off. That was 2019. 2 weeks after I moved to San Francisco is when I met my now fiance on the cruise. And then the pandemic hit, as we all know, and that just moved us from being dating to basically married in a short amount of time. And so here we are now, multiple years later, in surrogacy journeys, two separate journeys that I'm happy to dive into.
Yeah. Okay. So you had baby on the mind, like when you met your husband. Are you guys married now?
We're getting married on May 4th.
Oh, congrats. May the 4th be with you.
Yes. That wasn't the reason why we chose that name, but yes.
That's going to happen for the rest of your marriage.
I know. It already has.
How soon did you talk baby making with him?
From the start.
Yeah, because it was on your mind.
We had an at sea day on the cruise, and it was just he and I, and we were by the pool, no alcohol, no nothing. And just having a conversation about our life values and what we aspired for long term. And it was like, oh, okay, we align really well on these core issues, not issues, but these core goals.
Yeah,
and family totally. Was one of them. Uh-huh. So it was discussed from the start, because of course I had just come through a divorce and was like, I'm not making that error again. Yeah, from the start. And we were well aligned in those issues.
And did you go so far as to talk about how you would want to do it? Because you had just been on an adoption route.
We just knew we both wanted children, and we didn't talk about how we were going to achieve that until much later, just because I didn't want to put the cart before the horse and like jinx it or scare him away or anything like that.
Yeah. And then how was that? When you finally had that conversation, how was it?
He was pro surrogacy, being Chinese American. The genetics is really important to his family and the upbringing, and that's just cultural. Mm-hmm. And I was still leaning towards adoption because my mom was adopted. And so that has just always, my grandfather adopted all my mom and aunts and uncles and all that. And then the cost of the surrogacy was alarming to me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We attended the Men Having Babies conference in summer of 2021. It was done remotely because of COVID. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started to get the background of like, okay, this is how it would play out. This is how this works, and get a little more familiar with surrogacy. One of those compromises that this was really important to him, that we take this route.
Because genetics really mattered to him. Genetics don't matter so much to you. So it works well. So the plan is to use his genetics.
So we're doing one of each.
Okay. All right.
Same egg donor.
Let's go down this path, because there's so many different intricate decisions to make when it comes to our families, right? So your first conversation has to be, how are we going to do this? Okay, now we agree on the surrogacy. All right, now the next conversation is, okay, whose genetic material is winning here, really, in a nutshell? And there's many answers to that too, which you are a case in point. So let's talk about that. How'd you decide to do it the way you're doing it?
We both wanted two children. Regardless of how we went about that, having two children was always what we wanted collectively. We were like, okay, well, we have friends who have done surrogacy and they had twins. So like, okay, that's the route we should take. And then we knew creating the embryos, we could fertilize, you know, he fertilized half the eggs, I fertilized the other half. And then you can, of course, pick and choose what embryos you transfer to the surrogate. Mm-hmm. So that was our plan from the start, was, okay, maybe a little bit higher risk for the surrogate to do twins, but there are surrogates who are willing to do twins. And that was what we originally set out to do. That is not how it's panned out. But that's how we came to that decision that, okay, we're both going to have biological children, if you will, but one will be his DNA and one will be mine, but they'll be half siblings.
Right. Yeah. Which is like the best of our worlds, really. Like, it's as close as we can get, right? And so what happened, and I just want to say for everybody listening to who hasn't listened and knows these stories, like, the surrogacy route is really expensive. And I think you were kind of alluding to this, but you can take it like piece by piece so that it's not this huge lump sum. And I think a lot of people who do surrogacy do end up like one step at a time, save up for the next step, go on the next step, you know? So you can take it chunk by chunk. It's still a lot of money, but you know, you can work with it.
And that has played to our advantage. It's just, we've had a lot of bumps in the road and having to change surrogates out, but it has helped because it's about $150,000 per surrogacy journey without complications. We had to swap out a surrogate after two embryo transfer failures and then fraud involved. So it's helped it pace some of that out. The financial impact has been a lot, but the positive and silver lining is it's drawn it out a little bit more for us to deal with.
Take us through what happened. Let's go through it. So you know what you want to do. And then what happens?
Created the eggs, embryos in December of 2021.
So you found an egg donor through like a bank or?
Our surrogacy agency was able to locate somebody for us.
I talk about this a lot on the show. I call it the search for the superhuman. Some of us can get a little crazy when it comes to choosing that donor. I know I did. My hand is raised. How was that process for you two?
It actually wasn't bad because we knew we wanted to go with an Asian egg donor just for genetics and that way.
So that they both have Chinese in them.
And they resemble both Johnny and I. And well, one won't resemble me, and that's okay. we set the parameters for, okay, well, let's try and find, you know, if we're going to have, if we prefer to have boys, let's try and find pictures of like the egg donor's brother or father, or like to find out the height and the weight and the genetics of their makeup. If they have diabetes at 25,
right,
or other issues, you know, all that's got to be factored in. But Johnny's a physician, so that certainly helped navigate some of those medical concerns and questions as we sought out our donor. But we didn't, wasn't crazy and objectively done.
Did you have many egg donors to choose from who met your parameters?
No.
So that probably narrowed it down a lot. The Asian, right? I would imagine. Yep. If you're not non-white donors, all of a sudden your pool gets real small. Yep. And it's an issue in our family building journeys, but sometimes that helps make the decision.
Correct. We didn't have many to choose from. And so we chose one egg donor. We came out at the end of that where I had two embryos total, because it once, you know, as you know, the 50% reduction rate, basically every step of the process. So by the time we had PGT tested embryos, which is genetic testing where they check for like 300 different genetic disorders to make sure that the embryo is as healthy as possible, and we came away with two, and we transferred, we matched with the surrogate like 2 weeks later, had our first embryo transfer in June of 2022, which did not take.
And your husband, how many embryos did your husband end up with?
Five.
Oh, okay. That's a good number.
Good number. His were all female. First embryo transfer did not take, which was a huge letdown. And nobody prepared us for that. Of like, we go through these 10 weeks to 14 days, 10 days to 14 days worth of your mind goes down the rabbit hole of like what your son or daughter may look like, or like this path to parenthood has been 10, 15 years in the making for me. And then you get the news that it didn't take. And there's this huge emotional letdown. And we just, nobody prepared us for that. So we attempted again in October of 22. And that was my last embryo. So we came back with a positive result. The follow-up blood test, the numbers weren't quite where we wanted. And then a third blood test confirmed that they were declining and it was not a true pregnancy. So then I was then out of embryos. And then we later found out that the our surrogate, then surrogate, had dropped her health insurance that we were paying for contractually. And so she was just pocketing the money every month. That,
what?
And then, so that was also like, okay, we, she had broken our trust and she was cheating us. And we had gotten to the point where we did an embryo transfer with my last embryo and she did not have health insurance at all and didn't tell anybody. And like, had we gotten pregnant, we would have been on the hook for all of that. So we we had to pivot.
Pivot, big pivot. But where did you find this surrogate? Through the agency, no?
Correct.
And everything looked great because you speak with each other. No, you get to know
each
other.
There were red flags that our agency didn't pick up on, or they should have. And then we were so green that she preferred to work with straight couples and she was pretty religious. And we were like, well, after the fact, you start piecing through everything. I'm a criminal investigator by trade. So I start looking through and looking for the nuances of like, okay, this is where it went wrong. This is what should have been done. This is where we missed. There were warning signs, but again, we dealt with that process and then just had to reset. Not only was I out of embryos, but then we had to find a new surrogate after spending 16 months and tens of thousands of dollars. But that's life.
Holy moly. Okay. So you pivot. And you're out of embryos. So now where do we go from here?
I was like, okay, well, we're having two of your biological children. This is good. This is fine. We are going to do this. This is what we're going to do. And he was like, no, absolutely not. We are each going to have a biological child, even if he has to pay for that side of it, because we were splitting everything equally. He was adamant that he was like, no, we are going to have two children. One is going to be of yours and one is going to be of mine. And again, it's another compromise we made. It's like, okay. So we're going to have to make new embryos. So that's what we did.
You got the same egg donor?
No, because we were worried. There was one of three things going on. It was either the egg donor, me, or the surrogate. Because we had two transfers and they failed. So we're like, well, let's remove one of the variables. So we found a new egg donor to create all new embryos. And she was a fantastic egg donor, created, I think we came up with like 14.
Wow.
So and we had a whole new match.
Did he put his pool in too? So it was split again?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Great. Oh, okay.
just to make sure that if we're doing this, there's no additional cost. Okay, we'll split the eggs like 60-40, I think it was, because I was out. He still had five. But also we would like ideally like our children to be biologically related. So it turned out really, really well.
Yeah. Oh, okay, great.
Our service agency, they had, there was a change in management there, and they immediately rematched us with somebody else. And our surrogate is amazing. Couldn't be happier with how things have gone. She is a gem of a human being.
Oh, good.
And we are 23 weeks pregnant.
Oh, okay. Oh, congrats. So you met her. What's the story with your surrogate? I want to know a little more info.
First, we did a Zoom together. She's bubbly and younger, exuding just good vibes. I hate to sound like a Californian.
Listen, I love a Californian. You sound as Californian as you want.
She just had good vibes, good energy, and was like, okay, compared to the last surrogate, way, way different personalities, different interactions. Her story was different. Her reason for doing a surrogacy journey and wanting to help LGBTQ families was like, okay.
Atta girl.
She's just amazing.
That's great. And that's how it should be. She's pregnant with twins. Okay. Well, okay.
Due to the timeline shift, the surrogacy advocates and IVF physicians, they're no longer really willing to do double embryo transfers because of the risk that comes to the surrogate and the babies, naturally so. So we're like, okay, that's too much risk. Back when we did the swap out of the last surrogate, we had enlisted the help of another surrogacy agency because we wanted to have the babies 1 year apart. And because of the backlog, the process it takes to get there. Mm-hmm. And then next thing you know, we had two surrogates because of that timeline shift. And so we do have two surrogates. And so we only transferred one embryo for the one that's 23 weeks pregnant. Uh-huh. Not ready to discuss what's going on with the other surrogate at this point.
Okay, so you're in the process with that, with correct. Other surrogate. Whose embryo is in the surrogate who's 23 weeks pregnant? And then so you know, so you're being strategic about who goes where and whew.
Yeah, because of the struggles we've had, Johnny was like, no, I want you to take this surrogate and then I'll wait for the next surrogate to get cleared.
Oh, Johnny. Johnny's a nice guy, huh?
Yes, he is an amazing human being. So thoughtful and caring.
Oh, Johnny.
And how fitting on Valentine's Day.
I know, it's Valentine's Day that we're recording this. Yeah, exactly.
No, he's fantastic. So we'll have great news soon.
That's really exciting. And so now, and where's the second surrogate?
Also here in California.
Like close to you or?
3 hour similar? Drive.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. That's not far. Great. Now you're going to be managing two surrogates at the same time. And with that comes paying for all the medical bills, correct?
Yes.
Or paying for insurance, and insurance will cover it when it's a surrogacy.
That's part of what I've been talking about. And like I had an article published in the Gay and Lesbian Review talking about our journey and just some of the discrimination we face.
Let's talk about that.
It's a lot. So not only is it the cost that we bear completely out of pocket. Mm-hmm. I work for the largest employer in the United States, and we have no surrogacy related benefits for members of the LGBTQ community.
100%. Yeah.
And Johnny has worked for the largest healthcare provider in California, and there's nothing, because it's all based off of the definition of infertility.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You have to be trying for 6 months or so.
We as two men do not count.
Exactly.
Because we're not infertile per definition. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we've just submitted claims. It's just been denied. So no, it's all out of pocket for us. And that's not even counting the issues we face with, like, we've turned down a surrogate that was in Arkansas because of the attacks against our community and the legislative push by the right. Anything can happen. And so the state could say, okay, well, two people of the same sex cannot be on a birth certificate. You can't be in the delivery room. A hospital can say, no, we don't recognize you as the parents because the surrogate is the patient and the mother. Like any of that comes into play. Mm-hmm. So we've got to be strategic.
About where it is and all of the people that are going to be involved. Yeah, it's really scary. And really, honestly, like the way our country is going right now and then the fact that we are headed towards this election and there's a strong push to go backwards when it comes to our community, it is very scary when you think about that.
And our attorney, we're doing parental rights. All that has to be filed with a court. It's not as easy as heterosexual couples have it where the baby's born, the birth certificate, you're good to go.
No.
Like, no, we have to go to court and we have to file for parentage. And so whoever's not the biological parent, and our attorneys are also telling us, well, you need to also file for adoption because if the state were to change the laws, this won't hold up as well as legally adopting the child, despite both of us clearly being the parents.
Every lawyer, every person in law that I've spoken to on this show, highly, and this is even before things were getting scary. This is when things were looking like we were progressing in the right direction. Still, every lawyer I've spoken to says, no. You get that second parent adoption no matter what, because you do not know. You never know what could happen.
Just all these things we didn't think of because we just hadn't encountered the situation before. I was like, oh, okay, well, we got to pay for that as well, which we're going to do.
Right. It's very taxing on us and not so much on the non-queers who are making those babies just at a bar.
Yeah,
and they get rights. They get all the rights in the world.
And just the fact that we have to work so much longer and harder to try and build our family. And of course, if they're not encountering this, if they don't have somebody within our community that they're close with, they're never going to know. Mm-hmm. And I don't hold that against them. They're ignorant about it. And they're like pushing laws that are against our community. That's problematic, to say the least.
You're bringing up like a really great point and a point that we talk about all the time on this show. Like, first of all, representation matters. And if you can't see it, you don't know it's out there, right? And then also just the importance of our stories being told to not just other queer folks, but to all the people in the world who have no, it's not on their radar because it's not in our TV shows. It's not in our movies, these stories. We're not thought of. We're not discussed at the table when they're talking about fertility insurance, even though we are probably the largest audience for fertility insurance when you think about it.
I think it's Illinois and New York have made more progress than other states. And I assume here in California, the lobbyists are just too strong to affect change in Sacramento, to change the laws in California. So then Johnny and I could have claimed some of these hundreds of thousands of dollars we spent because we can't write any of it off on our taxes. The IRS doesn't allow us to claim that as deductions or anything like that. So we just, it's all this is after tax money and we just have to eat it.
None of our paths to parenthood are easy. None of them. And this one happens to be one of the most expensive ones, for sure. And now you've got two surrogates.
Whew. We're fortunate that we've been able, just our life, you know, we're older. We're going to be older parents. I'm in my early 40s, and Johnny is on the cusp of leaving his 30s. So we're very, very fortunate that we've been successful in our life. But again, we've had to wait this long because we couldn't have been able to afford it earlier.
Right.
And so now I'm going to be the old man at the graduation ceremony that everybody thinks is the grandpa, but it's fine. It'll be worth the wait.
Nah, you look good. You look good. And you're not that old, actually, when you think about it. But it's not fair. And also, to take that a step further, like to have the privilege to be able to do this, there are so many folks who can't at all. It's just not an option. And so creating a family is just not an option for them because there is no help. And unless you have the means, you're out of luck, which takes the pool down, just like the donor pool. There we go. Now we plummet down. You know what I mean? So much change has to happen. And that's why you doing what you're doing is so important. And stories like this need to be told. And
yeah, we've got work to do because I can't imagine if I was still a cop, like how I would be able, I would just wouldn't be able to afford it, period. Right. There's just no way. And thanks to you for allowing these stories to be told and for your platform, for elevating voices that need to be heard is what we all, as you know, need to be doing to make sure that somebody in Wichita, Kansas hears this.
Yes, exactly.
And knows there are avenues and resources, even like Men Having Babies, they have financial incentives. There are programs out there to help, as well as stories that we can all share and relate to.
It's in the storytelling where the change really does happen. I do believe that. For that queer guy in Wichita, Kansas, who doesn't know that it's an option, these stories are for him. And these stories are also for like Glenn down the street, who's as straight as the day comes and has never encountered a queer person and thinks what he thinks about us and how we make our families. So these stories need to get to him too, somehow. And that's the hardest part. How do we figure out how to get these stories to him?
I was really fortunate with my publicist did a phenomenal job with my book when it came out. And to be able to tell my story as a now former gay Secret Service agent, but now I'm a supervisory special agent, to be leading teams of special agents and to be able to get up to go on like Nightline, Cheddar News, ABC, CBS. Like I had really great exposure and feedback from people who read the book and connected with it. and hoping to use that same platform for LGBTQ family building and just trying to make impact somewhere.
That is amazing. That's like the surrogacy in New York was like the reason it has progressed is because of Andy Cohen. Like he's the one Andy. That I know. Oh, Andy. Yeah. Andy Cohen and Michelle Buteau paired up because she had to use a surrogate. She's a non-queer, but we forgive her for it. They paired up and made change happen in legislature in New York. It takes celebrity. It takes, you know,
it does.
It takes power.
I met Anderson Cooper years ago when I was with Hillary in New York, D.C., and he's done surrogacy now twice. And so trying to connect with somebody like he and like Dustin Lance Black, he and Tom Daley, and their beautiful family of like trying to lean into, obviously he's super talented, won an Academy Award for Milk. I was like, okay, well, have my publicist, can you pitch this to his people to see, okay, let's try and create something here to affect change. Again, like he did with Prop 8 in California, just trying to work every angle.
And then when you get to know them, send them my way, okay?
I don't know if that'll happen. I'm hoping, but put it out in the atmosphere.
When you become friends, just drop my name, drop the podcast in conversation. So what's going on with your book? Talk about your book. What's it called for everybody at home?
Breaking Free by Corey Allen.
Okay.
It's a saga of self-discovery by a gay secret service agent, which is a mouthful.
Yeah, but it says it all. It says it all. And that's we want the intel. We want the inside scoop on that. They can get it anywhere or Amazon, all places.
Just about anywhere. My publisher is small. So all the work that went into this was me. Big publishing houses were not involved with this. So I'm extremely proud of what we've been able to do with the book. And just the media footprint that it made is amazing. And also thanks to my publicist, Ashley White, just killed it.
That's awesome.
So to be independent and to be able to do this from that perspective has also been really empowering.
That's great. So now you are pregnant and soon to be pregnant with two. You're going to have two newborns, probably pretty close in age here. Mm-hmm. How are you prepared? What are you doing to prepare for that? Are you ready?
I don't think we'll ever be ready.
No.
Baby shower is in a month.
Oh my God.
And I just got promoted. So I'm trying to like balance out, okay, work is work, but I'm also going to take baby leave of figuring out the timing of all that between baby one and baby two. I mean, we're ready to be parents, but I'm also like counting down the nights. Every night I go to bed, I'm like, okay, I've only got 100 nights left of sleep before I don't get sleep anymore.
You don't get it until you're in it. And then it's like a big fat whoop on you where you're like, oh, now I get it, right? And that's so annoying to hear from people like, oh my God, it's going to hit you so hard. But it is true. And then you'll see and then you'll say it to people in the future. But it's still going to be like the most magical time of your life. It's so exciting. So exciting.
I absolutely can't wait. As we talked about, it's been a long journey for me. And to know that we've got the baby shower coming up, our wedding coming up, our baby moon, we're going to Japan because we can't travel in the month of May. So we've got to do the honeymoon first, just so we don't run the risk. Mm-hmm. So many exciting things coming up. And then into the fall, then we get even more fun. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. And then baby one, and then fingers crossed, baby two shortly thereafter. And then you're not going to know what hit you for like 5 years.
And I'm okay with that. And having children later in life, there's a lot of patience that comes along and a lot of life learning of knowing how to communicate with each other and the important things of that are going to be needed as we get possibly overwhelmed with children.
It is what it is. It's going to be beautiful and it's really exciting. Do you have y'all talked at all about how you're going to talk to the kids about their origin story and all the things that go along with our families?
There's more books coming, but one of them is going to be about how they came to be. And it's our way of telling them, because there's not enough representation out there, not only about surrogacy, but people of color, like Johnny's voice needs to be heard, needs to be amplified, because there's a lack of that out there. There's plenty of white people out there writing books, but I want his way in, but also make sure that they see themselves in it.
And there are more coming up and up and up, like donor conception books and books about the very different makeups that we have of our families. However, you know, probably be hard pressed to find someone with your particular situation, which is going to be two surrogates, two children close in age, same egg donor, because you use the pool from the second donor, correct?
Mm-hmm.
It's very unique. And so, you need to write it. And then, you know, it's going to happen. Another family's going to be like, oh my God, I can't believe our story is here. And that's what needs to happen.
It will.
We all need to do this.
Yeah, I've got all the printouts from our fertility clinic of the embryos when we transferred. I've got all that stuff. I save all of it. So that way, again, it's storytelling of like, well, this is what we went through to have you. This is why we love you so much. This is how determined we were to have you. So yes, definitely going to happen.
Yeah, no accidents in our community, that's for sure.
No, definitely not.
No accidents. Very wanted. Very wanted. It's very exciting. I'm excited for you. I can't wait to hear how it all goes. You're going to have to check back in like a year and let me know how life is.
When I don't have hair or it's all gray and I look haggard.
You'll have poop on you somewhere and pee, but you'll be fine. It'll be all good.
No more white t-shirts.
It's going to be great. I'm so excited for you. And lean on people. Lean on people.
We keep hearing that.
The best advice I can give. If somebody offers to help you out, take it. Do you have anywhere where people can find you?
At author Corey Allen, CoreyAllen, whether it's Instagram, Facebook. I do a lot of writing on Medium these days as well. So there's myriad articles there at author Corey Allen or CoreyAllenBooks.com. Everything is also linked through there.
Okay, well, keep up the good work. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep spreading this queer love and these queer stories. Hopefully I'll talk to you soon. I want to hear how it goes.
Anytime. Happy to have conversation. And Jamie, thanks again for having me and allowing everybody else to hear these stories. You're doing great work and we really, really need you and appreciate you.
Aw, thanks. You're going to make me cry. Thank you. That means the world. It really does. This is not goodbye. Can't wait for an update.
No, of course. Anytime, hit me up.
I will. I will.
All right. Thanks, Jamie.
Queer Family Podcast.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier. You're going to join and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in. And I'll see you next time. Mwah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.